Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
Our allies have declared emergency across the continent.
The carbon monoxide levels from these asteroids are unprecedented. It's like an extinction level event.
I'm calling in an airstrike before this escalates any further.
Save our son.
Mom's here, okay? We gotta go.
Don't you see what's happening there? It's everyone for themselves.
If you need someone to kick some monster ass, I'm your guy.
Showtime.
This is no longer about war. It's about annihilation.
Welcome to They Called Us a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Called Us a Movie and find us on Twitter and Instagram at TicTamPod. That's TCDAMPod. We are also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation, and you could find them at gvnation.com.
Welcome back to They Called Us a Movie. This is Anthony Delvecchio. With me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, friends.
I thought in honor of this movie, I'm going to legally change my first name to be longer. I can now go by Marcus.
There you go. Yeah, I wouldn't do anything in honor of this movie. In honor of this movie, I'm going to forget this movie exists. How about that?
That's a pretty easy thing to do, I'd say. This is, oh boy.
Thanks, Dan.
Yeah. So this is, just so everybody knows, we had our first unscheduled week off. For the first time in a long time, because I got COVID. I blame Mark.
It's all the marks.
I'm starting to give Dan some competition, being 5 feet away from Ant for almost an hour and did not get COVID.
Yep, but I did. Man,
like I said, I think the cure is within our blood, Mark.
Yes.
You know, I know you keep saying that. It. Historically, in those stories, it doesn't end well for you.
No. we disappear forever, and there's some secret government cover up. Like, oh yeah, you know, they died tragically in a Humvee accident or something like that. Like, Dan never drove a Humvee.
Yeah, you don't want the cure to be in your bloodstream, because there's only one way to get that out.
Right. And I don't do well with... Do you think that would help if I told the government I'm not good with needles?
It's like, yeah, we'll just cut your head off. That's the other way to get it.
Oh, it's fine, man. Don't worry. We're just going to kill you. You don't have to worry about the needle.
Hey, just lay your head in this rest. Make sure it's straight.
You're going to be out when we do it, so don't worry about it.
Just lean over this bucket for a second.
And the conspiracy theorist in me blames the kid that smacked his head on the steps while we were waiting in line for giving you
right. False flag. Distracted me while someone rubbed coronavirus on me.
That's the old bait and switch, huh?
Yep. Yeah. Used to be in the Cold War, it'd be like an umbrella with like a pin at the end that would poison you.
Hey, you jab him real quick. Oh, sorry, man. I didn't mean to do that.
That was just someone like slapping me with a used napkin with COVID coronavirus on it. But besides that, we all watched some stuff this week. So what did you watch this week, guys? Dan, what about you?
All right, so I watched on, I believe it's on Paramount Plus. I watched The Lost City with Sandra Bullock and Channing Tatum. It's fine. You know, again, nothing to really, I can't say anything good or bad about it. It's a movie. It does its job for, I want to say it's close to 2 hours. Oof. You know, some laughs here and there. Run of the mill, like rom-com.
Now, does Paramount Plus have commercials?
No.
Okay.
No. So I know on The Offer, which I've also been watching on Paramount Plus, what they do is they kind of do like a faux commercial. Like it'll cut to black for maybe 5 seconds and then come back. So I guess that's their like spacing. But I haven't seen commercials on any of the movies.
Okay.
Gotcha.
And the second one I watched on Disney Plus was the Chippendale movie. So that had gotten a lot of buzz on the interweb. So I gave it I checked it out, and it's nice. It was a lot of fun. Very, very cute. A lot of fan service in there. You get a lot of different characters. I think it's the new generation's Roger Rabbit, someone put it as. Okay. Yeah, it was cool. Yeah, I liked it. I thought it was fun. I think you guys would enjoy it.
Cool. All right. Mark, what about you?
Yeah, so that segues into the thing I watched pretty well. Also something that I saw in the zeitgeist on my Twitter feeds and all that. And something I don't normally watch, but everybody was talking about this this anime that just came out on, I believe it's Hulu? Spy Family. Apparently the writing was pretty amazing and not like kind of played with the idea of anime stuff. Basically, they know that the cuteness is the little tiny child in the show, and just play that up. And then just the idea, in short, is that you're following this spy that can disguise himself as anybody, basically, and he needs to create a family to take down this terrorist he's trying to take down. So he goes and adopts a child that he doesn't know can read minds. So she's constantly reacting to like anything he's thinking or the people are thinking around him. And it just leads to, in the writing there, it leads to some pretty good comedic situations, which I actually laughed out loud while watching. And then the wife that he ends up having is a trained assassin. And the only one that knows everything, like the secret identities and all that, is this little 6-year-old girl that can read minds. So, and she's also like a fangirl of spy assassin novels. So it's like, she's having this dream fantasy thing about being in this family, but, the writing's real sharp. You know, it's not over the top tropey in sort of things. And the situations are, while slightly predictable, are kind of satisfying and do touch at some weird social issues that you don't think about, because the assassin lady is like a 27-year-old single woman. And, you know, there's a whole subplot about the people around her and maybe the government itself thinking that's something she should go to jail for. It's kind of interesting. If you're into anime, and I think you would really enjoy it. And I think if some people just like some you know, well-written shows, I would give it a shot and kind of just not even think about the anime part. But check it out. It's on Hulu and it is very good. That's really the only thing I've watched over the 2 weeks here. I do have some plans for the holiday weekend, so hopefully we'll be talking about those next week.
Okay, great. Yeah, it's funny that you said that this was in the zeitgeist. This is the first I'm hearing of this, so we definitely run in different circles.
I follow a lot of video game people, so it's no surprise that an anime popped up amongst them. I usually ignore most of the animes that they talk about and recommend, but they the overwhelming amount of people that were talking about it, and you know, made me go, oh, maybe I should at least watch it and get a shot. So,
gotcha. As for me, I took my COVID time to watch a bunch of stuff. Not a whole lot, but just a good amount. I did watch one that will become a movie we're going to review sometime down the line in the near future. So I'm not going to talk about that one right now. But I also watched some movies, some newer ones, some movies that I haven't seen before that I probably should have. But I watched Old, the M. Night Shyamalan movie, Old.
You mean The Beach That Makes You Old?
The Beach That Makes You Old, the very same movie. It's M. Night is competent in terms of his filmmaking, but he's also a schlocky director, and he doesn't realize he is. That's the problem, is that he doesn't realize that this movie can be fun, but he's trying to turn this into a elevated horror type movie, where I would like to just see crazy shit happen, bones break and we see them sticking out and shit like that, and it just doesn't happen here. And there's also a moment where there's a part of this movie where it feels like it's about to end, and if it ends there, it's easily a better movie. But it doesn't. It continues for another 25 minutes. And because those 25 minutes, he has this in him that he needs to tell you exactly what was happening and why this beach is doing that. For me, yeah. I'm one of those people who's like, you know what? I don't need to know sometimes. And I really felt like this movie would have been so much better, because by the end of it, and that part where I was like, if this movie ends now, it would be a pretty good movie. I didn't need to know what happened. I didn't need to understand why it was happening.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it just kept going and kept telling us exactly what happened. So there was no surprise. There was like, and it just was kind of, I think the explanation was kind of lame. And it kind of, it kind of changes the message of the movie. But yeah, it's like a five, I would think. It was almost a 6.5, I would say. I said a 7, but that's a little generous. It's probably more like a 6.5 before that happened.
So this had the effect on your opinion, like the last 10 minutes of Birdman had on mine?
Yeah.
Essentially?
Yeah. Where pretty much. Like,
yep. Yeah. Yeah.
It's also, I felt like it was probably too long, too. I don't remember how long it was, but I felt like it was a lot too long. I think it wasn't even 2 hours, but it was like, an hour and 30 minutes would have been fun. I also watched for the first time, at least all the way through. I've seen clips of it before in my life. I watched Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh.
Why? I have no idea. I can't tell you why I decided to watch it, but I don't know. A lot of people say this is Stanley Kubrick's best movie, and those people have seen this and Barry Lyndon. That's the only explanation I could think of. Because I can't say it's a bad movie. It's a well-done, well-directed. Acting is fine. I don't think Tom Cruise is as good as people give him credit for in this movie. I don't think he's that good. Because the chemistry between him and his, at the moment, wife is not very high, which is telling.
Didn't they split up kind of
maybe 3 or 4 years or so.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. It's dull. It's fucking dull, man. And I wish I could tell you that there are moments at the end where it gets interesting and all of it pays off. Fucking doesn't, as far as I'm concerned. It's a whole movie about a dude that's really bad at cheating on his wife.
That's most guys, though. Right? There's not many guys out there who could successfully cheat on their wives.
Yeah, but he's like, he's trying really hard and he can't seem to do it. Like, it just never happens for him. He even goes to a prostitute and then is like, no. And I was like, well, now I'm going to go to this weird, I'm going to invite myself to this weird sex party. And he doesn't get laid there. Then he goes back to the prostitute in one of the cringiest, like, desperate things. And she's not even there. And then he finds out she has HIV. So it's like, wow, that's a good thing I didn't fuck that chick.
probably better than I
did. And then he tries, but instead he tries to fuck that girl's roommate. And then she tells him that the other girl tests positive for HIV. He's like, man, this just dude's just getting cock blocked all over quote unquote New York City, but it's obviously shot in London.
Yeah, he needs to get a little more clear before he can be good at cheating on the wife.
But what's crazy is this at the point where Cruise has his long hair phase?
It's a little long. It's not okay. it's not Magnolia long.
Okay.
Where he's got it like in the bun.
I can't imagine, even if we're in a world where we're pretending that, you know, obviously it's not Tom Cruise, it's whatever character he is. I can't imagine he'd have a hard time getting laid.
Well, no, everybody wants to fuck him.
Okay.
He just doesn't know how to do it. People aren't turning him down. It's more of just something always comes up where it's like, I guess I shouldn't now.
Okay.
Like his wife, he's about to fuck the prostitute, and his wife calls him like, hey, how long are you going to be? Like, I got some things I got to do. I'll be back soon.
Ruin the moment kind of thing.
The moment. And he was like, okay. Oh, never mind. And then the most desperation was when he goes back to see the prostitute. He brings her like pastries. I was like, what? This dude, man, the fuck, dude.
Yeah, everyone knows to woo women, you have to bring them cheese.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what I've read.
Yeah, it was like, and every time he just goes home to Nicole Kidman, she just talks about how she wants to fuck other dudes, or she's dreamt about fucking dudes in front of him. I don't get the appeal of this movie, to be honest with you. I really don't. People say they love this movie, and he's got so many better movies.
I wonder if they're just saying that because it's a Kubrick movie.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's people just trying to be different. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, like kind of the galaxy brain sort of thing. Like, oh, right. You're a film fan and you think 2001 is his best movie. Well, I'm a real film fan. I think Eyes Wide Shut is his best movie. So I'm better than you.
Yeah.
The movie sucks.
Hot takes.
The movie kind of sucks compared to his other movies. There's so many better ones. 2001, Clockwork Orange, The Shining, Paths of Glory, Doctor Strangelove. All of them are better than this movie.
Was this his last movie?
This was he delivered the first cut, which wound up being, I think, more or less was the final cut. And then he died like 4 days later.
Maybe that's why, too, right? People kind of jump on the bandwagon.
Yeah, there's a lot of movies he's done that's better. Half of Full Metal Jacket is better than this movie.
The first half, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. Yeah. I've had plenty of chances to watch it. I have no desire to watch that movie.
I can't give you a reason to watch this movie.
I like Tom Cruise.
I mean, Nicole Kidman looks great in this movie and she gets naked, but
it's a plus, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably find those clips on Pornhub.
Now, does Tom Cruise get naked?
He doesn't. He doesn't show dick.
That's a problem.
Right.
It's a problem. I mean, you got prime Tom. I don't know if he's still in his prime. It's hard to tell. But yeah, you got prime Tom Cruise and prime Nicole Kidman.
Yep.
You know, they're a power couple. They both got to do it. You know,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, we're always pro dick on this podcast.
Yeah, because I feel like that's kind of beta energy right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Your wife's getting naked. Come on, man. Reciprocate.
Exactly.
Don't hold her out to dry.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, Eyes Wide Shut.
He makes up for it in Maverick, I've heard, so it's fine.
He drops dong in Maverick.
Yeah, on the jet. he teaches the kids that if like the best way to do it is you have to fly naked. So
I was already planning on seeing Maverick. You just made me a definite first.
I'm listening.
Listening.
Mark's getting the back row.
Extra like big thing of popcorn, Mark.
First matinee on Friday morning. Back row, big popcorn.
There you go. Hey, listen.
You know what
you do
I'm
what you
got to
do, man.
Yeah.
Just let us know how it went.
Call someone else if you get arrested, though.
Yeah.
Tom.
There you go. Yeah, Eyes Wide Shut. I'm not the demographic, I guess. I don't know who is, but yeah.
Angry great. Loners, the unemployable.
Exactly. Yeah, and the only other thing I watched, really, was The Warriors, which is another movie I haven't seen. which was fine. That was, you know, cult classic, but yeah, not right home about. But I did watch something else that I do want to touch a little bit on, because this week was our May movie of the month, and that's the reason why we watched the movie we watched. But I decided that I was going to watch the movie I had picked to go into the poll, and I watched Deadly Cheer Mom on Tubi, Tubi original. And this is a note to all the people that voted on this and voted on the movie we watched. You done fucked up. The Deadly Cheer Mom was great. That's all I got to say about it, except for Deadly Cheer Mom is directed by, I believe his name is Dan Campbell, I believe.
Okay.
Hold on one second, I'm pulling it up. Doug Campbell. Doug Campbell has also directed such classics as Zapped Again, the Disney Channel original movie, but most importantly, Accused at 17, Betrayed at 17, Stalked at 17, Missing at 17, Stalked by My Neighbor. Does this sound starting to sound familiar? Stalked by My Doctor. Stalked by My Doctor The Return. Stalked by My Doctor Patient's Revenge.
Go ahead, Mark.
Now, did you read those in release order?
This is release order, yep. He's done 100 movies between 2009 and today.
Because
he's done a bunch.
This is the first that I realized that Stalked by My Doctor was not the first movie in the Stalked by series.
Yeah, Stalked at 17 was before it. And Stalked by My Neighbor, too. But then he really hit gold with Stalked by My Doctor. I had no idea that he actually directed this movie before I picked it. And I didn't know until like 20 minutes before we got on this podcast. But it's great. It's hilarious. It's all about like deepfakes. And I love the one trivia note in this is director Doug Campbell was inspired to make this film after he was a victim of deepfake technology.
What? Oh, man.
wait, in 2009?
I have no. This movie came out like this year.
Oh, okay.
2022. Holy
shit. What a story.
I need to know more. But yeah, Deadly Cheer Mom. Maybe we'll watch it one day.
And real quick, I thought when you were reading those titles, I thought it was one long title.
Oh, like, no.
Stalked at 17, Betrayed at 17. I was like, oh, man, like this is a long title.
No. Yeah, so Doug Campbell, he also directed Deadly Cheer Mom, and it's great. Maybe down the road we'll watch it. But we in September, I think we're due for another Stalked by My Doctor movie. I think that's what we're watching them. So, yeah, but that's all I watched this week. So we're going to take a quick break and listen to some ads, and we'll be back in a second. And welcome back. Now it's time to get into this week's movie, and this week was our May movie of the month. And we decided, because we really couldn't think of anything that was specific to May, we just decided, you know what, let's dip into what Tubi has to offer in terms of its Tubi originals. So we all picked three Tubi originals to go up against each other. Mark had picked First Person Shooter, I believe, is the name of the movie.
Yes, I find it funny. I think all three of these movies are very closely represented to what we look for.
Probably. In movies. Yeah. I picked the aforementioned Deadly Cheer Mom, which 100% is exactly the type of movie that I pick. And then we wound up getting chosen for us Dan's movie. Dan, you want to introduce this week's movie?
Sure. So digging through the Tubi originals, they had some decent looking picks, but the first thing that popped into my head, or the first thing that I saw, was a Baldwin. I saw a Baldwin staring at me, and I thought, all right, yeah, like, it's not a good Baldwin, so this has to offer some sort of entertainment.
And it's not the bad Baldwin.
I guess he's second-tier Baldwin, if that's what we're going by.
Yeah, I mean, what would you rank the Baldwins? Alec is obviously first.
Right, yeah. Alec is first, and then I guess we're going to say Billy.
I think you mean William.
No, never. Never, ever. I don't care what he's trying to do with his life now. It's always
like a Larry Lawrence Fishburne situation.
I guess it really all just comes down to where you rank Billy Baldwin and Daniel Baldwin.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Steven is obviously the worst.
Yeah, I don't know Billy and Daniel's body of work that well.
I mean, if you showed me a picture and you said it was either one of them, I would be like, yep, that's it.
Yeah.
I have no reason to not believe you.
Right.
I could probably pick Alec Baldwin and Stephen Baldwin out in a photo thing, but yeah, not the other two. I even forgot there was a Daniel Baldwin, to be perfectly honest.
Well, I forgot there was Stephen Baldwin. I knew Daniel, but I was like, I know there's another Baldwin. And yeah, Stephen is the, I guess he's the black sheep of the family.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, listen, could be worse, I guess, if you're the Baldwins. So I saw that, and War of the Worlds Annihilation is the name of the movie. I just figured, War of the Worlds, it's a classic. Let's see where they go with it. And they took a hard turn, a hard left turn into Boringville.
Mm-hmm.
This was oof.
Just so you know, I'm looking at a picture of Daniel Baldwin, Alec Baldwin, and Billy Baldwin. I still don't know which one is which in terms of Daniel or Billy.
So who's the youngest? I don't know the hierarchy.
I think it's Steven.
Steven is the youngest, right. And Daniel Baldwin was in Biodome, right?
No, that's Steven.
Is it Steven? Oh, shit. Yeah, that's bad. Okay. Yeah, I don't know.
Steven's in Biodome and The Usual Suspects.
Daniel in?
Are two of them in Backdraft? Or am I misremembering?
I have no idea.
I know one of them is.
I don't know my Baldwins. I can't tell my Baldwins from the others.
Daniel Baldwin was in Nothing But Trouble, which we've covered here.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, for a time, he seems like he's the Baldwin you got when you couldn't get Alec. His movies like Bodily Harm, Mulholland Falls, Vampires.
It looks like Billy had some decent movies in the early 90s. Right, he was getting some play. Right, he had Backdraft.
Yeah, he was the one in
Backdraft. He had, I think, he was in a movie called Fair Game, and that's with Cindy Crawford.
Cindy Crawford, right.
Christopher McDonald, Salma Hayek.
Yeah, he seemed like he had a decent career on his own.
Yeah,
Born on the 4th of July, Flatliners, Backdraft, Sliver,
pretty good.
Fair Game, Bullworth. Yeah, not a bad decade for Billy Baldwin.
Is he? I think he's also in. There was a movie where they were talking about famous. Oh, I think he was in the Santa Claus or Fred Claus. Was that him? Where it's like the famous siblings, and Billy's talking about how it was tough to be Alec Baldwin's younger brother.
I don't know.
One of them.
If you're talking Fred Claus to me, and that's, you might as well be not speaking my language.
It's Greek. It's all Greek. Yeah. The classic Fred Claus. Come on, man.
No, I don't know.
What I wanted to talk about was, because again, I thought there was only three Baldwins, so I was gonna do the old fuck, marry, kill, but I can't do that. There's four Baldwins.
Yeah.
And I don't know them well enough to do anything with them.
Billy Baldwin is also in Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, he's the cop.
Dixical.
That's right. That's pretty good. Yeah, he's done his own thing.
Yeah. Fuck, marry, kill. Let's see. I just combine Daniel and Billy, I would say, because they're interchangeable. Not to be inappropriate, but I got to kill Alec before he kills me.
that's tough.
I definitely, so like Alec Baldwin is the most successful, but he's also a prick. I would not want to marry him at all.
He's unhinged.
Yeah, because he'd also, if he's not gonna like verbally abuse me over the phone, he's probably gonna make me have like a ton of kids, assuming I could have kids in this scenario.
Right.
But like Hilaria has popped out 9 of them in a span of like 4.5 years. That's not even like mathematically possible, but somehow she's doing it.
It's the Baldwin gene.
Yeah.
They're workers.
I think I'm gonna kill Alec Baldwin before he kills me. I mean, that's the surprise pick. So I guess I'm marrying Daniel Billy, and I'm fucking Steven. Yeah, I'm not happy with any of those.
Yeah, you sounded.
Hey.
Yeah.
Yeah, you definitely, if we're killing Alec in this situation, and you definitely fuck Steven, because it would bother him the most.
I just want him out of my life as quickly as possible. So if I'm not killing him, I'm just fucking him.
Yeah.
I don't want to live with Stephen Baldwin.
No.
Because imagine being trapped in that biodome with him. That'd be awful.
But is he okay if the weasel isn't there with him?
No, I think he's like a maggot chud too.
Okay. Yeah. That's possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, because I didn't know if it was like Pauly Shore set him off. You know what I mean? Like, maybe if he's by himself, he's all right. But if you get Pauly Shore in there, that's what he's like. He has to kind of step his game up for being douchey.
Yeah. Now, there was always this one line reading in Usual Suspects that just irked me. Like when they find Benicio del Toro's body and he's like in the, like on the beach, he's like, we have to bury him. And like, with what? With our hands. And the way he says hands always like takes me out of the movie completely.
Bad line reading. Yeah. That'll,
yeah, that bad line reading. That
for sure.
So Steven, yeah, in and out of my life.
This movie has a ton of bad line reading in it.
All of it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I think Triago might be the only good actor. Like, he's not bad.
He's okay. No. Yeah, he's fine. He does the best with what's given to him.
Yeah. Mark, where are you coming from with War of the Worlds Annihilation? That's the name of this movie?
I was excited when, I think at some point early on, I think it's in the credits, has to be, when the word asylum popped up. I'm like, okay, maybe this can be salvageable, can be at least something. But no, it was 2 hours, and being on Tubi with commercials made it even worse. This brought me back to flashbacks of watching Justice League with commercials on the TNT app. it was just... Even broken up over two sessions, it still felt way too long. Mm-hmm. A lot of the stuff was pretty, I kind of saw where they were going with stuff, but I think they were trying to, like when they tried to make a twist happen, it was just to make a twist happen. There wasn't much, built up for it. And it was just, I was like,
And they don't even care about the twist.
No.
In the story.
No.
Like, and I was trying to see, like, speaking of the twist on Letterboxd, I was trying to, like, see if anyone mentioned the twist, and people didn't. So I almost felt like it was too subtle. Because even in the goofs, they're naming goofs that, if you know what the twist is, it's like, that's not a goof. Like, things about, like, military uniforms and stuff like that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's just, it was just really... disappointing in the sense that it tried to be too serious and didn't go as crazy as asylum films sometimes go. And I think that was to its detriment. I think there's way too much overacting from a lot of people to the point that it wasn't even like funny overacting. I think, the actor plays Tiago was probably the one that understood his assignment the best in the movie. Mm-hmm. Even though it does seem like he might have ad-libbed a little bit here and there, and I think that was to the betterment of his character.
Sure.
And I was almost, I don't know about you guys, this is not the twist that happens, but I was almost expecting that they were like, when they took him back to the commander, that it was going to be Jutta, that he didn't actually die, that he somehow survived that. Just the way that movie was going was everything was coming up great for the girl, you know, in terms of she saved her son in time. Her brother was still alive the entire time. You know, it's going to be like, wow, what's the twist? As if the brother, you know, the husband's still alive. And I was like, nope, of course. We haven't seen a Baldwin in a while, so it has to be him.
Yeah.
I was getting concerned when we didn't see Billy Baldwin for like 40 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. It's a bait and switch if I ever saw one.
Big time.
Yeah. So this movie, so I'm a veteran of asylum movie watching. So I know that when they don't have giant pythons versus sharktopuses, it's not going to be great. I think we started off this podcast watching an asylum movie with the Land of the Lost or whatever it was called, the Land of Time Forgot.
Yeah, and that went there where this didn't. This tried to teach a lesson bad, but we'll get into that.
The CG's bad.
Yeah.
The acting's bad. It's entirely too long. There's just so much time to just crib off of things that we've seen before, like Independence Day. The twist has been done 100 times better, probably like a dozen times by The Twilight Zone, if you know, if you're listening to this, you haven't watched the movie, I don't suggest you watch it. But the twist is that we're watching this whole scene play out, thinking that we're watching Earth get invaded by aliens. The twist is that we're watching an alien planet get invaded by Earth. Dun dun dun. So,
yeah.
But the movie does not care about it. We hear it once, and there's it never goes anywhere. It doesn't change the plot. Doesn't change any aspect of the movie. And this is, it's, you know, the Twilight Zone episode I know of is Third from the Sun, where you're watching these people escape a dying planet. And they're like, at the very end, it's like, well, it's just a million light years away and third from its sun called Earth, and fade out with Rod Serling over it, which was an excellent episode.
Yeah, probably done way better.
Yeah. This, on the other hand, they do the little thing. They do a little things here and there. We were talking off podcast, like the names are almost names you've heard before, but just slightly off. Like Triago and Ashlia, and what was Luca's real name?
Isn't it Lucas? It says Lucas.
No. It's I did say it pre-show.
Yeah. But like Patlin, that's like someone's first name is Patlin. Like what? Judda. Like these are names that these are like words that that could be a name, but they are like it's I've never met anybody with these names before in my entire life.
It's like they put this into a word processor, you know, and like, all right, whatever the computer comes out with, that's what we're naming our characters. And then like that, there we go.
Yeah, it's like that old Japanese baseball game.
Yeah,
Mark, you probably know where it's like they kind of portmanteau like real baseball players' names into each other. So it's like Dave Winseco or something like that, you know, instead of Dave Winfield.
It's like Sleeve McMichael or something like
that. Yeah, exactly. So it's just slightly off. And like the guns are just slightly weird looking, I noticed, and maybe
everybody has different guns.
Yeah,
it was like the army has like several different guns, no one's uniform.
Yeah, the handguns are very plastic looking, and I wasn't sure if that was like a style choice or just like cheap prop choice, because this movie was not cheap.
It was not very cheap.
What would you say do you think the budget was for this movie?
Oh wow, bud!
Couple million.
I'm gonna say 8 million.
Oh no, estimated.
I was gonna jokingly say 20 because half of that goes to William.
Estimated budget $22 million. Oh,
yeah. Jesus Christ! No. Where? There,
yeah, I don't know. Billy Baldwin's getting scale. There's no way he's getting them more than scale for like a week's worth of work. I have no idea. No idea where the money went for this movie. It's bad. It's boring. More than anything, it's just boring.
Yeah. So go ahead,
Mark.
I'll admit to you, Anne, that I didn't fully put the twist together until you said it about the names being connected to the twist.
Sure.
And as you read them off and then repeated the twist that I caused, like, that's why their names were weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're the aliens, right?
Yes. Yeah. And I'm like, I got all the other connections you mentioned. In terms of the twists, and then just reading off the names again, because I mentioned it before the podcast. I was like, oh, I don't know. It seemed like it was on purpose, but it also been insensitive, the names they were coming up with. Oh, okay. Sorry. I was just having that moment.
Yeah, no.
All the pieces together.
Yeah, it's just, they're just off. They're not off enough that you'll be like, why is that person named Omicron 9? That's weird.
but then the alien, you know, quote unquote, is named Gwen.
Yeah.
That's a dead giveaway. Like Gwen.
Yeah. I guess it's all that stuff that you think is like, well, cause like people are talking about like the military uniforms are off. That's not what they would wear. And Billy Baldwin's got a beard that wouldn't fly in the US military. It's like, well, I guess these are all things that kind of point to the fact that it's not actually Earth, but
yeah,
it's an interesting twist done very poorly, I will say.
And, as you were saying before, how it's just a boring movie. You know, I can forgive a lot of the movies that we do that are bad, but there's a lot of entertainment value. Like we covered Raw Force recently. Bad movie, but it's anything but boring.
Yeah.
I can't forgive a bad, boring movie because it takes you right out of your experience.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So War of the Worlds : Annihilation from 2021 is directed by Maximilian Elfelt, director of Avengers: Grimm Time Wars, which is exactly what you think it is. It is a ripoff of the Avengers with Grimm's fairy tale characters. It's also directed Bachelor Night, End of the World, Apocalypse of Ice, Dracula: the original living vampire. Stars: Ari Thompson, William Baldwin, Noel Guglielmo, Rashad Freelove, Kennedy Porter, Emery Franklin, and Michael Marcel. Has an IMDb score of 2.2 and doesn't have a page on Rotten Tomatoes. And there is no box office because it's a Tubi original, but budget, as we've mentioned, $22 million, man.
Where did they get that money for? Or like, where do they get it from, I guess, right?
That must be Sharknado money.
Maybe, yeah. Because, yeah, I don't see, it's a free service.
I'm assuming Asylum put up the money to fund the actual movie and then it sold it to Tubi.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah, this, did we mention how they solved this movie is basically the ending of Independence Day?
Yeah. So, yeah, the end of the movie is they hack their computers using their own computers. And then the mothership takes one shot and just crash lands. Yeah. It's like if the Star Destroyer in Star Wars got hit once by an X-Wing and just like tanks.
Blew up. And the main character of Ashlia, she's kind of like, you know, she's giving us the techno babble for what she's doing. And like, you know, I'm trying to figure out the code and like if it's compatible, blah, blah, blah. And there's a soldier there. Like, well, how do you know if it's going to work? I'm just going to have to guess. That's not a line you write into your movie. I'm just going to have to guess. No, that's a stupid thing to say.
Yeah, there's a lot of like contrivances that come with this twist. It's like, they all speak the same language.
Right.
You know, the DNA is exactly the same. It was like, yeah, I mean, I don't know how else you would do it, but it's like it all kind of just like is a shrugging of the shoulders. Doesn't make sense.
I think the reveal of the twist might be where it gets lost, because when it's supposed to be the dun 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 moment, they immediately have an explosion like a half second later.
Yeah.
So it's like, unless if you had like captions on or anything, you wouldn't have caught the sentence unless you were paying very close attention.
Mm-hmm.
She literally explains they're from Earth, you know, lays out all the stuff, Orion system and all that, like key touch points, but then immediately explosion. And it's like, did they want to reveal that? Like,
right.
You know, sort of thing.
Yeah. Not fun. We've done better movies.
Yeah. I apologize. I didn't know this movie was 2 hours long without commercials.
That's tough. That's the tough part. It's an hour and 53 minutes.
That's unforgivable, really.
Yeah.
And that's on me, guys. I should have done my research.
Yeah, you should have.
I couldn't imagine that a Tubi movie would be over an hour and a half.
Let us never speak of Tubi originals again until we do death.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
At Parker, our purpose is simple. We want to make the world a better place. By working more efficiently, by using more sustainable practices, by developing better technologies, we keep moving forward. With each new idea, innovation, and partnership, we're one step closer to fulfilling our purpose every single day. To find out more, visit parker.com/purpose. Parker, engineering your success.
To your mom.
Yes. Yeah. Just lock it in the vault.
Which is not 2 hours long.
Yeah. Again, it just, we all dropped the ball on, well, I dropped the ball on this, and our friends and followers on Twitter, they dropped the ball.
Yep.
But they couldn't have known. Or did they?
You know, you guys had two other movies you could have chose.
Yeah.
Well, I'm interested to also hear about First Person Shooter, too.
Yeah. Maybe not this week.
We'll figure it out. We'll get to it.
Yeah. You guys want to get into the plot?
Let's do it.
Yeah.
All right, Dan, what do you got?
Okay, guys. I'm just asking that you, anyone in this, within the sound of my voice, please go over to geekvibesnation.com. Go check out good friends of the podcast, Tia and Brittany, and their podcast, The Top 10 with Tia. It's a podcast about top 10 lists. So if lists are your favorite thing, I know they're pretty popular. So if that's your thing, go check them out. You could follow Tia on Twitter at TC_Stark, and you could follow Brittany at Itty Bitty Brit on Twitter as well.
Okay, great. And we are going to take a break, and you guys are going to listen to some messages from friends of the podcast. So we'll be back in a second.
Hey, this is Ken M.
Padawan Jay.
Coach Duffy.
From the Ocho Duro Parlay Hour podcast. Every week, the ODPH is talking sports, movies, TV, comics, and more. It's always a parlay of topics on each episode. You can find the ODPH on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Stitcher, Podbean, and wherever you find great podcasts, such as the one you're listening to right now. Don't forget to check out OchoDuroParlayHour.com, where you can find the links to all of the ODPH social media accounts, links to the bands whose music you hear each week on the show, hashtag 607 podcast info, and parlay points, our companion blog section of the show. Thanks for listening to the ODPH. Now get back to your regularly scheduled podcast.
Welcome, travelers. Seems like you're looking for a story. Well, I got one for you. It involves adventure, friendship, and all
Earl, why don't you tell him about that time I stole that big-ass melon?
Yeah, I was going for more.
Or you could tell him about the time I kicked her ass, Earl.
I wouldn't ever tell him.
Do I need to get my ref gear on?
Okay, everyone, shut up. Now come with me as I tell you a story from afar.
Hey, everybody. My name's David. I'm the DM for From Afar Podcast. From Afar Podcast is all about four friends separated by distance, but brought together by adventure. Hope you all stop by and give us a listen. Thanks.
And welcome back. Now it's time to get into the plot for War of the Worlds, Annihilation. We open on some asteroids careening towards Earth as a couple stops their car to enjoy the night sky. The stars really bring out your eyes, the guy says, even though it's clearly cloudy night. And as they go in for a kiss, a shooting star crashes down nearby. When they go to investigate, a gas shoots out, causing them to choke, and then they just straight up die. And then all over the world, what appears to be asteroids crash land on Earth, or what we think is Earth.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
I was going to say that sentence comes with a heavy quote.
Yeah. Meanwhile, government officials on a military base frantically try to call their loved ones, and then Billy Baldwin looks like he just woke up and holds a meeting with officials. Like, he didn't even run a comb through his hair at all.
It's all spiked and it's all over the place. It's just like, this is how you know, like, he's phoning it in. Like, I'm just here for a paycheck.
This is what the kids do, right?
One of the officials, Ashlia Welish, again, just almost a real name, tries to explain that the asteroids are releasing an odd amount of carbon monoxide and are oddly similar in size to each other. Billy Baldwin blows her off, seeing as how she's in the cybersecurity operations, then clears the room of her and everyone but his military team. Meanwhile, Ashlia's son Luke is at school, and the students are using tape to tape up the windows to protect against poison gas. And Ashlia's husband, Judah, calls her and lets her know that they are deploying him because he's in the military. And he makes a whole bunch of promises that he can't keep in a movie like this. And the phone breaks up and they lose connection, and then Jetta deploys. Ashlia tries to call her brother, who is a doctor, but he's dealing with patients at an overrun hospital. Jutta's regimen makes it to their destination, and they start to move. Jutta tries to call Luca, or Luke, whatever his name winds up being, before he heads out, but he can't get to him. Ashlia goes to Billy Baldwin to tell him that they're reporting seismic activity underneath the surface and at the asteroid sites, and begs Billy Baldwin to pull the team back.
At the beginning of this, he makes the most, like, dismissive remark. You know, and she goes, oh, there's been seismic things around the asteroids where they landed. Well, that would happen when an asteroid hits Earth.
Yeah. Idiot.
No, duh.
What do you think happens when an asteroid crashes into Earth? Seismic activity.
This is, they never tell us, and there's a few things wrong with this movie. It's one, it starts off very fast paced without kind of giving us a time frame of when the attack started to where we are at the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think from what I gathered, it all takes place within like 2 days, I think.
Yeah, but it also feels like it's been like months.
Right. That's what I was thinking. Like the way that they talk sometimes, it's like, oh, you know, we're gathering up information and we're strategizing and we're you know, people are we're recruiting. Like, oh, so like this must have been a month or so. But then it, like, oh no, you should have seen how it was the other day. All of this is happening in 2 days?
Well, yeah, because it definitely does, because like Luke's at school when it happens, and like right. That's half of the plot. Part of the plot is her getting to him. So it's like it happens in an afternoon. Like, everybody went to school and work that day, and then it happens.
Right, which is, you know, which would also kind of trick you into thinking that that is the real Earth, because that's exactly what would happen. Like, oh, we're under attack. Yeah, why aren't you at work, man? Get to work.
Papers aren't going to push themselves, bro.
Exactly.
So he brushes her off again. So Judah's team moves in on one of the asteroid sites and into the gas. In the gas, they get into a firefight with some unseen things, but they're firing lasers, whatever they are. And this is really just in gas, so Asylum could save some money. And when the firefight is over and the smoke eventually clears, only one of the soldiers left standing, Judah. But now the smoke is cleared to reveal giant mech suits walking around like AT-STs. Billy Baldwin calls in an airstrike as Jutta calls for backup in vain. I'm going to switch between Jutta and Jutta the whole time. Fine. Jutta eventually gets blown away by the mech suit as Ashlia can only watch. Billy Baldwin puts the base on lockdown, but Ashlia's friend sneaks her out of the base so she can be with her son Lucas. Her brother Patlin, meanwhile, tries to call her but can't get through, and then the hospital starts to evacuate as the gas starts to fill the halls. Meanwhile, Luke watches his friend get dragged off by some sort of mech tentacle, and Ashlia makes it to the school where there's no sign of life, but finds Luca hiding under one of the desks.
And somehow finds him amongst all those classrooms.
Yeah, it's like she knew where his class was.
Yeah.
It's the first classroom, too, that she checks.
She knows. Parent-teacher conference, PTA meetings, you know, parent-teacher night, she knew.
Yeah, she's an attentive mother.
Yeah.
You love to see it.
I mean, her, you know, her husband was probably deployed an awful lot, so she had to be. She had to be.
That's a good point, right?
At some points, I'm sure. They make it home to grab.
I'm sorry. That's a good point. I apologize.
They make it home to grab essentials, and Ashlia brings out the guns for the rest of the movie, and I mean that as her forearms, because she's jacked. Ashlia then breaks it to Luca that Jutta died fighting.
She wears that outfit for the rest of the movie, right?
Yeah. One thing I kept noticing is how weird she runs. Did you notice that? Like, especially in the beginning, because she's wearing heels, so I get it. But, like, she's very, like, short-strided.
Mm-hmm.
It just made me laugh.
She might be the biggest over-actor. She does fine. Like, listen, for what this movie is, she does fine. She's probably the biggest over-actor out of everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Because she lets you know what she's thinking or feeling at every moment in this movie, just through facial expressions.
Mm-hmm.
Big over-the-top facial expressions.
They pick up everything they could grab and leave, Luca grabbing a pocket knife off his side of the table before he leaves. Patlin goes to a convenience store to see if there's any supplies, but a junkie comes in and starts hassling Patlin for his bag, assuming there's meds in it. Junkie tosses Patlin on the ground, but Patlin then finds a gun behind the register and pulls it out, pulls it on the junkie, and then says that the lengths they are resorting to is not the right way to go about things, and it's not us, it's them. And then he leaves.
Which is also a huge... Now, looking back on it, I thought that, oh, that's such a stupid line, but looking back on it, that is very much us, you know, yeah. quote-unquote us, not whoever they are.
Yeah.
But they all have the same guns, apparently.
That's what I was like. There's like the conceit is that we're like, so we've independently developed very similar technologies in firearms, automobiles, the school systems,
hospitals,
hospitals. Yeah. I mean, I get that's like the, you know, suspending your disbelief a little bit, but yeah.
But and then we are the ones that have the mech suits and the fucking laser beams.
Right.
What is it? It makes no sense.
Yeah. And Ashelia and Luke rest for the night on the side of the road and eventually have to flee when one of the mechs starts shooting at them. They make it to a trailer and go in and start to look for supplies. But then someone comes home and holds them at gunpoint. Tensions flare up, but eventually they cool. And the guy that owns the trailer offers them some food. The guy introduces himself as Tiago and cooks them all some food. Tiago then tells them that they could take the RV. He doesn't need it anymore. They get into an argument, Tiago telling them to get out of his way because he's out to survive for himself. But Ashelia convinces him that the strength in numbers, so he agrees to go with them.
Yeah. At every moment in this story up until the very end, I was waiting for the double cross from Tiago. And I think you explained in the beginning why, because of the other movies I've seen this actor in.
Yeah, Training Day specifically.
Yeah, I don't trust him.
In an apocalypse, he might have been one of the least trustworthy people. You know, like just the way that he's not in good shape. He's a jerk. Like I don't want to trust my life and my son's life to this person who, you know, they could probably outrun him and do everything better than he could. He just doesn't seem like the heroic type of character.
He's also, he contradicts himself. Because this whole scene, he's like, you guys are just going to get in my way. You guys go on with that. I'm going to feed you, and then you're going to be on your way. So you just get out of my hair.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, I'll come with you. I know a place. It's a prison that we've turned into a mission where I've invited a whole bunch of other people back to for survival. Because we create a community. Okay. What about being all on your own?
Right. Yeah. So why couldn't we come with you?
Yeah. So they convince him that they're strength in numbers. So he agrees to go with them. Then they stumble upon the junkie from the convenience store who is monologuing about Judgment Day and how they deserve it. And then one of the giant mech suits sneaks up on him somehow and stabs him in the chest with a mech tentacle. And
I just want to say for... any aspiring actors out there, find this guy's monologue, use it for your audition, because it is cinema. It is beautiful, beautiful cinema. The way who cares anymore? I don't. We deserve to die. Women, children, they're all gone. what a great. Great monologue. And I'm not being... I loved it. I was dying laughing.
Yeah. Yeah, if you do go into an audition and do that, film it for us. We'll give you like $10.
It'll be like $5 kind of each, and then we'll figure it out. Yeah, yeah. We'll get you something.
We'll get you a sticker.
Yeah. Maybe we'll make a t-shirt.
With just the entire monologue written out.
It's just the monologue. I recited the monologue from War of the Worlds animation, Annihilation, and all I got was this stupid shirt.
Patlin, meanwhile, makes it to a makeshift clinic to try and lend a hand any way he can. Some old drunk dude scares the shit out of him, talking about how they're going to come back and finish the job. And meanwhile, Ashelia, Tiago, and Luke make it to a prison where Tiago worked, figuring it would be the safest place to be. Prison has turned into a shelter, and a bunch of people, citizens and prisoners, have been working together since the event. Tiago then shows them to a couple of cells that they could sleep in, and then brings Luca along to get some food, while Ashelia takes a nap. She wakes up in a panic and then runs around the prison looking for Luke. She finds him outside in the yard with Tiago, who is teaching Luke how to shoot a gun. Tiago winds up punking Luke,
but giving him an unloaded gun for target practice. It's hilarious. Not really. Luke goes back inside, and then Tiago and Ashlia have a heart-to-heart, which then gets interrupted by a big-ass ship appearing in the sky. Meanwhile, Patlin is at the clinic, and they hear a noise, and they need to evacuate. So as everyone goes outside, everyone starts getting picked off by the mech suits one by one, just making people disintegrate. Everyone but Patlin gets evaporated. And back at the prison, Tiago starts arming everyone as they try and fight back against the mechs, but everyone is just getting picked off one by one here, too. Eventually, Tiago and Ashlia use grenades and destroy one of the mechs, and they take its gun. And Ashlia, Tiago, and Luke manage to escape from the mechs that are attacking the prison. Ashlia says that the mothership must be communicating with the other mechs. And if they can knock out the mothership's communications, they would be able to take down the other mechs.
You have to give the mothership a code.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the analogy in this one is the queen bee and the worker bees.
I saw this in a movie one time. I think it was called Memorial Day.
It would have been a good opportunity to reference. I'm sure there's an Independence Day ripoff that Asylum has. They could have mentioned that.
Yeah, or at least like a porn parody, right?
Yeah. There is, if you, in when they are at their house and they go to into Lucas's room, there is a poster that says the tornadoes versus the sharks.
Oh, not yeah. There you go. Yeah,
as in Sharknado.
Yeah, very tongue in cheek.
Mm-hmm. Patlin comes across an injured alien pilot, and he takes off its helmet to reveal that it's a woman, one that looks human and speaks English, a female pilot. Who would have guessed? She has an injured leg, and he says he can help her. Ashlia, Tiago, and Luca are trying to hatch a plan. Come across a military group that just so happens to be the same division as Jetta was. So the military guys lower their weapons and then tell them that they are stockpiling weapons down at the base, and Ashlia, Tiago, and Luca should come with them and join them. Patlin brings the alien woman to the bathroom to get cleaned up, and she almost has a freak out about the water because she thinks it's toxic, but it's not. She introduces herself as Gwen. She says that they are soldiers that were told this was a great war, that they were meant to fight for their people.
And why? Why would she think the water is poison? It's the same as on Earth.
Well, I think, what if, she keeps saying Earth is dying, and then when we see in the, I guess what is supposed to be a mid-credits scene, the people on the ship are all, like, hooked up to oxygen. What if Earth has gotten so bad that water is toxic?
Oh, I guess the water supply is poisoned.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because okay, I'm assuming this is, like, supposed to be the future, obviously, because Earth doesn't have giant spaceships.
Right. And, yeah, laser beam technology kind of stuff.
Yeah. He tells her they need to get to the hospital, and she thinks they'll kill her, so he manages to find her normal clothes to pass her off as non-alien.
Except they forget to, you'll get to it, cover up the most identifying mark on her.
Yeah. They mention it, and then they don't do anything about it.
Yeah.
The military group brings Ashlia back in front of Billy Baldwin, who's planning an assault against the mechs. Ashlia tries to push them to attack the mothership instead. Billy Baldwin agrees, so they plan to pull all their firepower into an attack on the mothership, but they need to go onto a different part of the base in order to get the missiles. Patlin and Gwen try and make it to a hospital when they are picked up by a military truck. Patlin and Gwen pose as a husband and a wife, and the truck loads them on the back to get them some help. These two are terrible liars, first of all. Patlin's like, yeah, we're from back east. Why just tell them where you're from?
Right, what's
you're
the
not
difference?
An alien.
Right, it's like he's a little kid who got caught trying to steal a cookie from the cookie jar.
Yeah.
It's very obvious that the writer was trying to hide the twist still. Because
right, because like, where could they possibly be from, right? It's not our Earth, so.
Yeah.
But at one point, there's a Humvee with California plates on it.
Well, I didn't say Asylum was good at hiding the twist.
But it's so you go through all this trouble and like, oh yeah, there's a shot of a truck with California plates.
And would the script coordinator be fired because of that?
No, the art director has art direction.
It's weird. It's such an unnecessary twist to have.
Yeah, I think it's supposed to have like a deeper meaning, right?
Right, right. It's you know, this movie came out last year. So a lot of movies these days are big on the our planet is dying motif. right? We're killing our planet, and I guess that's what they were going for. You know, we've destroyed our planet. We need to go destroy someone else's planet now.
So they pose as husband and wife, but one of the officers notices a QR code tattooed on Gwen's wrist. At the base, the team gets ready to roll out, but Ashalaya tells Luca that she wants him to stay safe in the base. Tiago says he'll hang back with Luke, who is disappointed he's not going, but he gives his mom the pocket knife he brought from home, and the team moves out, leaving Tiago and Luca behind. You would think that this pocket knife is going to come up and play a bigger role than what it's used for.
But it was meant to be a lot bigger than what, like, they thought when filming and writing this movie that would be, you know, a lot bigger. They go, oh, the knife! The fans.
Yeah, I mean, it's used to jam open a circuit breaker because they don't have a Phillips head screwdriver, basically. But why doesn't the officer have a knife on him?
Wouldn't it have been
great? I feel like that's standard something to have, right?
Yeah, at least nearby. Like, how great would it have been instead of taking the pocket knife, he takes the screwdriver, the Phillips head screwdriver from home, and like, this was Dad's favorite screwdriver. He always taught me, you know, always have a tool nearby.
Yeah, maybe that's human technology. That's Earth technology that they had no answer for. Oh my God, it's bolted on some of these screws with. I couldn't tease on the top. How am I supposed to get this open? All I have are flathead screwdrivers.
And that's why they had to leave. We need to find a planet that doesn't have these.
Yeah.
It's infuriating a lot of the big moments in this movie where they try to make it impactful.
Yeah.
And they all just fall so flat.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's a scene, right? I think we're coming up on where Tiago, you know, he kind of like sacrifices himself for Luca or Lucas. And so he dies. And then the fucking roof falls on the mech, killing the mech.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just ruined the big sacrifice.
Yeah. Or isn't he shooting at the sea? Is he shooting at the roof to try and knock it?
Yeah, I thought he was shooting at the mech.
That makes more sense.
Oh, it makes perfect sense. But from what I remember, actually, it doesn't make sense at all. You're going to shoot the roof?
I mean, yeah, I feel like at some point they have to realize that shooting at these mechs isn't working. So they need to try a plan B.
But why? All right, so here... There, you have the scene in the prison where they use the grenade.
Yeah.
And the grenade works, you know, it's gangbusters on these things, apparently.
Yeah. Why not have other grenades?
Yeah, right? And I'm assuming the caliber of the bullet for the machine machine gun, or what with it, the turret, it's got to be pretty devastating, right? It's not your normal caliber.
Mm-hmm.
So why is it, like, why are... grenades the answer, but not anything else?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, they don't explain it.
This movie fails already, you know.
Yeah, it's, you know,
it was, I was with the it so well.
Yeah, I was with it up until that point, and then, you know, I had to walk away from it.
Back on the truck, the team gives Gwen blood, and they reveal that they know she's an alien, so they interrogate her and ask her what she knows. Gwen says that her planet is dying, and they were sent out to find another planet that could sustain their lives, and they found this one. Their plan was to wipe out the population and take over the planet. And they come from Earth.
Dun, dun, dun.
That's the big reveal. This isn't Earth the whole time. Oh, no, I was wrong. It wasn't Earth all along.
Damn and then, you.
And then there's an explosion. And meanwhile, the group starts moving out on the base, trying to make it to the cache of missiles. They get into a firefight with the mechs. Meanwhile, a mech attacks the part of the base where Tiago and Luca is. Tiago tells Luca to run, and Tiago stays behind, unloading on the mech, and then he's ultimately vaporized, but then the ceiling collapses on top of the mech. Ashalaya and one of the soldiers makes it to the cache, which winds up being destroyed, so they have to come back to the command center to find it destroyed, and Billy Baldwin tells her that they don't know where Luke is. They then devise a plan to cause interference with the alien communications using one of the downed mechs to transmit a signal. Meanwhile, the mothership starts releasing more forces. And the military truck has been overturned, and Gwen seems to be the only one that made it out without any injuries. But one of the officers grabs her by the throat, plans to bring her in front of Billy Baldwin.
Did you kind of get, like, did you kind of go, ooh, when he did that? Ooh, he grabbed her kind of rough.
I thought he was going to, like, strangle her right then and there.
Right. Like, oh, damn,
and then,
dude.
Like, that would have been a good turn for Patlin. Like, Patlin then uses a gun and kills him, right?
Right.
Yeah, that would have been a good turn. But that's not what happens, right?
Cause no.
Because he has that whole scene in the convenience store where he's like, guns aren't the answer. And then let's say the officer Brennan is the only other one that survived the crash. He's like, this is all your fault. I'm going to kill you. And then that gives Patlin the opportunity to say, hey, sometimes guns are good. I don't know.
Right. Yeah.
That's a good message.
Right. Well, but it wouldn't be the first time we've seen that in a movie.
Yeah. There is a movie specifically that does that we've covered, and I can't think of which one it was.
I remember, like, when we talked about the new Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Oh, yes. Yes.
That
exactly.
Was right. The girl that survived a traumatic experience with guns. And then it's like, oh, but all you need is a good guy with a gun to come
yeah,
around.
That's exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Weird. Then they devise plans. Grabs her by the throat, plans to bring her friend Billy Baldwin. Eshlaya tries to hack the system, but is running out of time as the mechs start to march on the base. But
they just had a countdown clock the way Billy Baldwin was at.
Yeah.
2 minutes.
And this is where the pocket knife comes back into play, where it just is managed to jimmy open a console. She manages to hack the system and turn the alien drones against the mothership and start to fire on the mothership, which then immediately just crashes. And then the rest of the mechs fall when the mothership does.
I like in this scene, you know, the mechs are attacking the base and Billy Baldwin is using binoculars.
Mm-hmm.
And they're no more than like 100 feet away. Like, these things are as big as buildings, and you're like, you need binoculars to see them?
Yeah, I can see them with my own eyes, dude.
Right. They're not very far, Billy. It's I get it's for dramatic effect. You're in charge, but you could probably just use your own eyes there.
Yeah, they're like 10 stories tall.
They're pretty easy to spot. It's a clear day.
At that moment, the officer brings Patlin and Gwen to Billy Baldwin, but Baldwin tells him that Patlin is cool, so let him go for now. The officer Brennan tells Baldwin that Gwen is the alien, but he immediately assumes that this means that aliens can morph into humans. Then Gwen says that aliens did a recon mission, then realized the DNA structure matches the aliens. And then Eshelia freaks out on Patlin for helping the alien and pulls a gun on Gwen, telling her that she has lost everything because of them. And then Gwen tells her that she is at her mercy, and if Eshelia chooses to kill her, she will accept it. They notice that there are smaller ships coming off the mothership, and Gwen says that they aren't warships, they are refugee ships, and there are innocent people on them. And then Luke comes out of the back. After all this commotion, and Eshelia hugs him, then she shows Gwen the video of Jutta, tells her he died because of her people. Gwen says she has family too, and they are on the refugee ship, but she understands the loss that Eshelia has. And then
that scene is so cringy.
Yeah.
She gets on her knees, I am at your mercy.
Yeah, it's weird. It's a little weird. She treats her like she's like a judge, jury, and executioner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Throw myself at the mercy of the court, basically.
Yeah. Like, I don't understand the whatever planet they're on, the inhabitants of this planet, like, and they're like baby face turn, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like they're the ones that are attacked, and like, oh, but we need to show mercy to this invader now for God knows what reason. She doesn't do anything, she hasn't helped them out in any way.
Mm mm.
Right? She's not the key to any of this.
Yeah.
So I don't understand why Eshelia is like, you know, you ruined everything, but I can't kill you. Why not? She did nothing for you because your brother kind of has a thing with her.
Yeah, I guess it's just the whole idea that they don't look, you know, if it's the difference between aliens that don't look like us versus aliens that look exactly like you, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. Sort of okay. Like,
wow. What are we becoming? We're turning on ourselves by turning on them. You know,
we are the Walking Dead.
Exactly. Yeah. This movie is very Walking Dead. Like when it went to the prison, I was like, Jesus, this feels like the Walking Dead.
Yeah. The Well, Gwen was very subservient to a person with authority with a gun because she is from Earth.
Right, so, she knew better.
Probably from the United States.
Yeah.
You know, like, I got to follow this guy. No, and then they turn on Billy Baldwin.
Yeah. He just loses favor immediately. Baldwin. He prepares an airstrike despite everyone pleading with him to call it off. Eventually, the officer refuses to give the airstrike command, and everyone pulls guns with Billy Baldwin, who slinks away, calling everyone traitors as he does.
I don't know how they'd let him leave with a gun.
Right. He's like a cartoon villain. I'll get you next time.
Yeah, like they didn't go, oh, he won't go out there and just start picking off these refugees one by one.
I fully expected him to come back at one point when they're all getting together to, you know, like, I guess, you know, break bread in a way. Like, Billy Baldwin's still out there with a gun. What's to stop him from just coming in and blowing a few of them away?
Everyone else decides to make up and hug and then set out to meet the refugees with open arms. And then we fade out, and then Billy Baldwin somehow managed to steal an alien spacecraft, pilot it through a wormhole and back to Earth all by himself, and starts firing it on the planet. And that is the end of War of the Worlds: Annihilation.
The my favorite acting in this movie is Billy Baldwin's eye. It's constantly twitching.
Yes.
When he's getting ready to fire, or he's having words with all of his crew or whatever, his soldier.
There's nobody on that ship.
No, it's who's he talking to?
He's talking to himself. He piloted it himself.
It's just, let's see how they handle their own weapons. Fire. And what is going on? There's a bunch of empty seats behind him.
So weird.
Who is he talking to?
I guess it's voice activated weapons too.
Yeah. First of all, we're never going to reach that level of technology as a society because we're too stupid. Yeah, so yeah. There's no chance in hell we're getting any of that. Secondly, how does he escape this situation where he's pretty much like being court-martialed, right?
And they just let him go.
Yeah.
And he just runs away and then somehow finds a perfectly working alien ship.
It's such a fantastical ending. I love the ending because it makes no sense. It's such a tonal shift from the rest of the movie.
I guess that was the final nudge when they show him shooting Earth.
I guess they had to spell it out, right?
Yeah. Well, they had to set up the sequel.
That's what Jen said. Like, they wanted a sequel so badly in this.
I mean,
what's wrong with just keeping War of the Worlds the way it was?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, why did we need to introduce humans?
Who knows? There might be a sequel. I doubt it because this one cost $22 million, but
that's a lot.
I do love how they offhandedly mentioned the original War of the Worlds.
Oh, did they?
Well, they said, yeah, we sent scouts down here. You know, previously.
Okay. I didn't even make that connection.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because, yeah, I thought in the original War of the Worlds, it's Martians, isn't it? I thought it was meant, or, you know, creatures from Mars.
Yeah, but I'm just like...
No, but that could be.
Yeah.
Entirely possible. I didn't think about that.
Yeah, Jen thought, my wife thought the whole thing with the water was like, oh, that's what took them down in the first War of the Worlds. Like, well, I think that's the one, the aliens from Signs.
That's Signs, yeah.
That's Signs, yeah.
But she said, isn't there, like, something small took them down? And it was, I think they said microbes, like, essentially, you know, the common cold killed them.
Yeah.
So I thought that's what they were getting at. Like, oh, who knows what's in that water? It could kill them. But, yeah, just, I don't know why they had to try and reinvent the wheel here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess they didn't want to. It's crazy because they spent $22 million on this movie. I don't know where it went because I'm like, oh, well, they just wanted to save money without like having to have like prosthetics for aliens or something like that. But it's like $22 million could have paid for that easily.
Yeah, easily. And you don't have to use a ton of different aliens. You just make one or two and you use them over and over again. I was curious. I had a question for Mark. The mechs in it, they kind of, did they remind you of the Metal Gear Solid robot?
Yeah.
Like the design was very sleek, and
the only difference is because it's the first Metal Gear robot. That one has like they gave it like a shield and stuff like that. Like,
okay,
fine. But a lot of it's, you know, based off that and then slightly off of, you know, Gundam anime, you know, sort of with the giant mechs like Titans and Titanfall. And, you know, it all comes from the same culture, essentially. But yeah, you could see somebody played a video game before when creating the robots in this movie.
Yeah.
Because even the bigger ones resembled something I've seen in a video game before.
Interesting. You know,
the ones that kind of looked like a T-Rex.
Mm-hmm. It looked like, because to me it reminded me a little bit of the again the Metal Gear Solid, yeah. And then the what's the robot from RoboCop?
Oh, something.
Yeah, you know what I'm talking about, yeah. Though, from the first RoboCop, it's like the bipedal flat top machine.
ED-209.
Yes. So it resembled that a little bit.
Yeah, and the AT-STs from Empire Strikes Back.
That might be what I'm thinking of with the giant.
Yeah. Or Return of the Jedi, actually.
Yeah, like the head part of the big ones with the force fields around them looked a lot like the Star Wars.
Yeah, yeah. It's again, you know, just a lot of dull moments in this movie. A lot of really bad line reading, unfortunately. And I'm not putting this on at the feet of the actors. I think they do the best that they can with what is available to them. But yeah, just a lot of scene chewing in most scenes. I wasn't connected to any of the characters. Like, after a while, I was trying to figure out, why do we have the brother in this movie? The doctor,
mm-hmm.
Right? Because they don't meet up until the very end of the movie, and we know nothing about their relationship. You know, Ashlia and what was his name? Patlin. Yeah, Patlin. We don't know their relationship. Like, did they love each other? Did they, like, was there kind of a rift? You know, there's nothing connecting us there. So why? I don't care if they meet up or not.
I think he's the humanity of this movie.
Okay.
Right. That's his storyline.
Yeah.
Because he's helping Gwen.
Right.
I think it would have been better to just follow one or the other. I didn't want both of them.
Interesting.
And I would have rather have just stuck with Ashlia and Lucas. You know, they suffer the most in this mm-hmm. movie. Right. They lose their father, their classmates. They meet up with Tiago. And that, like, you have that kind of relationship going. I'd rather just follow that. I don't really know if I needed Patlin in this.
Well, I guess he's to have to give the reason why the alien soldier wasn't killed immediately, essentially.
Yeah, yeah, because he's a doctor. He's trying to help people. Yeah, it makes sense, but...
Yeah, that was the excuse they came up with for that.
I wonder if you could have just made the twist just at the end. Like, a la M. Night Shyamalan, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you don't need Gwen in it to spell it out. Oh, you know, this is humanity.
Yeah.
Because you could have, like, Ashlia could have figured, you know, a la Jeff Goldblum, given the mothership the virus, the cold, shot down their mothership, and then they're going to inspect the ship, and they just find a bunch of people who look like them. And, you know, like, maybe you could show, like, the captain's lot.
Like, yeah, an American flag on the side of the ship.
Exactly. Yeah, like captain's log. You know, we left the USA on this date. Blah blah blah. And now we think mm-hmm. we found a compatible planet. Like, oh, all right. Like the characters wouldn't know. Like, the USA or America or Earth means nothing to them because it's not their mm-hmm. planet. But to the viewer, obviously, it means something. There's a connection there.
Yeah. Yep. This movie was a chore. But
it was. I'm sorry, guys.
It's okay. It's really, when it comes out to it, it's their listeners' fault.
Right. And, you know, we got some feedback on the Twitter poll, which is always, we love that. And, you know, we always highly encourage it. And someone had the same reason for picking this as I did, because it's a Billy Baldwin movie.
Right.
So Billy Baldwin still puts asses in the seats, I guess.
He does. It's not like that Daniel.
Right. Yeah, what is he doing? He's just mooching.
Yep. Not a damn thing. That's for damn sure.
I always, anytime I see something with a Baldwin in it. I always just imagine what their family gatherings are. And I always think it's never good.
Yeah.
Because they're all very pretentious people, it seems like.
Yeah, they're probably just all assholes.
Right. Yeah, they're all very passive aggressive to each other. And I think Alec is too big of a name to even attend his own family's gatherings.
I would imagine if the four of them are together, the way it goes is that Alec, Billy, and Daniel just like playfully joke with the other bus balls. Steven tries to butt in and they all just jump on Steven and tell him to shut up.
Why are you keep coming back, Steven?
Yeah, it's like, oh man, here. Oh man, you're, you know, whatever. I can't think of a good insult because, you know, brotherly insult for the Baldwins. And then Steven goes, oh yeah, Daniel, you're this. And shut up, Steven.
But everyone could hold over, you know, again, it's in poor taste, but.
Allegedly.
Allegedly, yeah, like that's you hold that over Alec's head forever if you really want to be an asshole.
Yeah. All right. I think that's it. We talked about it and it's over. Now we can move on with our lives.
We've squozen our whole supply here.
Let us never speak of War of the Worlds: Annihilation ever again.
Yep, I agree.
So that's going to wrap this up this week. Check out us out on the socials and all that good stuff. We've got another episode planned for next week, as we do every week. So I don't even know why I say that. But yeah.
Just to let everyone know, maybe people get scared.
This is not our planned last episode. So rest assured, we'll eventually have another one. Probably next week, but who knows. Yeah. All right. We're getting out of here. The director of War of the Worlds Annihilation was Maximilian Elfelt. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling Maximilian Elfelt, well, you certainly made a movie, didn't you?
Thanks for listening to They Called Us a Movie. Subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to check us out on Twitter and Instagram at TicTamPod. That's TicTamPod. You can also check us out on TikTok at They Called Us a Movie.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.